All right, we're taking up some aspects of the Haggadah. Start off with a little organization. It's very important that the Seder, it's very important with regard to the Haggadah to have a general sense of the order. That is, instead of just focusing on the so-called trees, like every word, every sentence, there's a time and place for that, but a lot of times you just get lost. You don't see where one thing is leading to another thing, and just you don't see the structure, the overall structure. So it's good to have a sense, even though it might be on an elementary level, a general sense of what's going on. How one thing, what the category it falls into, and how it relates to the next thing. As we'll see, there are different elements in the Haggadah. And if you can delineate, if you can define them, it makes things easier. And then, of course, once you have a general sense of where, what the purpose of a different section is, then you can go into the particulars of that section. But that's an important thing. Anyways, the Seder begins, of course, with Kiddush. And on this night, the Kiddush is unique. Different than the Kiddush of every Yom Tov and Shabbos, in that it does partake of what's one of the four cups. And each one of the four cups is a different aspect of the central mitzvah of the night, which is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So that's why we mentioned this in Yochel Mebo'od Yom, that I would have thought that you could perform the mitzvah of telling the story, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus story, while it was still day. And that section concludes with, you can't because it's Bavur Zeh, because of this. That is, at the time that you have Matzah and Maror in front of you, which establishes the fact that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim can only be done at the time that you have Matzah and Maror in front of you, which means two things. First of all, that you have to have matzah and maror, the objects of the mitzvah, matzah and maror. And of course, at the time, this also delineates the time factor, because it doesn't become matzah, it doesn't become maror until the mitzvah is in effect, which means actual nightfall. So the Kiddush also can only be recited at night, and not mibo'od yom, while it's still day. While it's still day would mean that you could start the Yom Tov before actual nightfall. As we do, Shabbos, when the days are long, you could start it from the time which is known as the Plag HaMincha, halfway point between the time of Mincha, the afternoon Mincha, the late Mincha, and Shkia, which is sunset. So from that halfway point, if a person wants to, they can start Shabbos or Yom Tov early. That's the concept of adding from the chol, adding from the weekday to the holy. And then, indeed, if a person is Mekabel, if they accept the Shabbos or Yom Tov, it becomes Shabbos or Yom Tov for them. This rule would apply to Pesach as well. Now, normally, if a person starts Shabbos early, they can make Kiddush in that time, because it's Shabbos already for them, in terms of the Kedushas Hayom, the holiness of the day. On Pesach, a person can start Pesach earlier. However, even if they did, they can't make Kiddush until it's actually night, because the mitzvah of Kiddush partakes of Sipur, Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that can only be done at night. Then, after Kiddush, of course, this Kiddush is different in another sense. And that is that generally, on Kiddush of Friday night, it's not necessary for each person to drink from the wine. Although, to begin with, one should drink, but you don't have to drink. If you had in mind to fulfill your obligation with the person who's reciting it, and that person has you in mind, so then you're Yotzei the Kiddush, as long as at least one person, preferably the one who's making Kiddush, drinks. That's because the Kiddush has to be over a cup of wine. But that doesn't mean that each person who is Yotzei has to actually drink wine. So on Friday night and on Yom Tov night, you don't have to drink wine. However, with the Kiddush of Pesach, each person has to drink wine. Of course, the question is, why? Why does each person have to drink wine? And if you fail to drink wine, would you be lacking in the mitzvah of Kiddush? The answer is that you would not be lacking in Kiddush, but you would not fulfill the Dalet Kosos. You'd be lacking in that Kos. Because the mitzvah is to drink 4 cups of wine. And each cup is connected to a certain aspect of the Haggadah. The first one is Kiddush. The second one is the story, the Sipur Yetzias HaTzraim, or Haggadah. The third one is Birkat HaMazon, which also contains a reference to Pesach, to Yetzias HaTzraim, and in the Yalav Yavo. And the last one is the Hallel, that the fourth cup is set over Hallel. So each person, of course, has to be careful to listen to the Kiddush, of course, and also to drink, even whether you normally drink on Friday night or not. Then you have Karpas, which is eating of a vegetable and removing the Seder plate from the table or putting it to the end of the table. It's basically the whole point is to make a shinui, to make a change, to attract the attention of the child, that the child should ask. That's the real institution of Karpas. So that any other thing, we've discussed this over the years, anything that you would do which would cause the child to ask, why is this night different, should be done. That is, there's a formalized version, the eating of the vegetable, that normally we don't eat a vegetable before the meal, so the child will ask, why is this night different? And then there's the removal of the tray, because that'll increase the curiosity. Why are we removing the tray? We have all this food out there, and we're not eating it. Why is it being taken away? So that's all done to increase the curiosity of the child. However, the person is supposed to be creative. If this doesn't get the child to ask, then you're supposed to use your own creative devices, come up with other kinds of changes to attract the attention of the child. Of course, the reason for this is... All right, so then that's the Karpas. That's the story of Karpas. Then you have Yachatz, the breaking of the middle matzah. That's because the matzah should be broken. And then you have Halach Ma'anya. Halach Ma'anya is sort of an introduction to Sipur and is an explanation of the matzah. The idea of breaking the matzah is so that the recitation of the Haggadah should be in conjunction with the matzah. So this is sort of an explanation of the matzah. This is the bread of affliction that our fathers ate in the land of Egypt, and so on. The reason for breaking the matzah is the Gemara says that it's darka shalani b'prusa, that a poor person, generally speaking, eats pieces. You know, he's eating in a hurry, whatever, he has his pieces. He doesn't have a full loaf, so to speak. Let me read to you from the commentary called the Siach HaGrid, which is based upon the Shiurim of the Rav, Rav Soloveitchik, Zichron Levracha. And he says, the commentary on Halach Ma'anya, that we find two distinct ideas pertaining to matzah. On the one hand, it's called Lechem Oni, Klomer, Avdus V'Shibud. That is to say, affliction, slavery. As Rashi explains, he quotes Rashi on Dvarim, Tes Zayin Pasuk Gimel, who explains Lechem Oni, Lechem Shemaskir Es Haoni. It's bread which recounts the affliction, Shenes Anu B'Mitzrayim, that we experienced in Egypt. So Rashi is saying that that's basically the concept that's attached to matzah. However, that itself is an excellent question to raise at the Seder. The second idea of matzah. We're going back now to the Rav. So he says, there he quotes the Rav Gamliel, the statement of Rav Gamliel, that the matzah is an expression of the geula, of the redemption. Thus we see that matzah incorporates two ideas. On the one hand, it's affliction and subjugation, and on the other hand, it's geula, it's redemption. I'll just say over briefly an idea, and that is that there is a relationship between the two. That is, that the question, of course, arises, what makes the Jews unique? Why is it that the Jews attain the real freedom? The real freedom is not the physical freedom, but the geula. And that is to say that people have a recognition that the true purpose of life is to redirect the energies from the natural lusts, the fantasies. Most people are living in a world of fantasy, pursuing their dreams, so to speak, as opposed to using their intelligence to perceive truth. The whole idea of the Torah is that man's perfection lies in living a life in accordance with truth. By the way, that's the Midrash that describing the tablets, the Luchos, that it was the writing of Hashem, Choras al Luchos, engraved on the Luchos. And the rabbis, Darshan, so to speak, that don't read it Choros, but read it Cheros, that the freedom, true freedom, is only on the Luchos. That is, the only Ben Chorin is one who's Osek B'Torah. Only a person who's living his life in accordance with Torah is truly free. Free, because free means to be in line with your nature. So the other idea of freedom that people have today is not true freedom. That is, that the United States is fighting for democracy and freedom, that people shouldn't be oppressed. But that means that people should be free to live according to their own desires, to their natural lusts. That's not truly a state of human freedom. That's an instinctual state of freedom, that nobody should be repressed from instinctual gratification. Of course, that's a good political idea in the world, and that's certainly a precondition. But if a person does not know what his purpose is and is living his life in accordance with his instincts and his fantasies, so that's not a state of freedom. So what makes the Jews different? So here you see that the avdus, the enslavement in Egypt, was not just a random kind of thing, but it had a purpose. It achieved an objective. And that is that as long as the Jews were in a state where they could have done whatever, you see that they were developing in Egypt and they were very successful, they were very capable people. So then why would they have been willing to receive the Torah? Now every other nation that was offered the Torah turned it down. What made the Jews different? So the fact is that when a person's in a state, sometimes a person gets ill or a person is in jail, whatever the case may be, and the person can no longer indulge their physical and emotional fantasies, so then they're in a state of mind where they're willing to look at a different value. A lot of times you see this happens to people in jail, that they're cut off from all of their physical drives. Now the only place where they can put their energy is in thought and something creative and study, the pleasures of the mind, so to speak. So that's why the two are connected. That God utilized the experience of Avdus for a purpose. It wasn't a random phenomenon that the Jews should suffer, and now God comes in and I'm going to save you. In fact, somebody asked a question this morning. That is, I don't know, it was in the name of some rabbi. I don't know the name. It's not a bad question, because you read later on that we praise God who keeps his avtacha, who keeps his promise, and that God calculated the end. As then it mentions the bris bein hapsarim, the covenant between the parts, where God told Avram that you should know that your children will be strangers in a land which is not theirs, and they'll be afflicted, and so on. And afterwards, I'll remove them with substance, with wealth. When they leave, they won't leave empty-handed. And also, the nation that afflicts them, I will judge. That's a very significant paragraph that comes up later on. But it would seem from this that this was something which was preordained, that the Jews should be slaves. Now, again, that's another opportunity for a question. If somebody's paying attention and someone's listening to it, they may ask a question, and that is that why are you praising God? We have to praise God. That's the very, very major theme of the evening. That praising God, saying Hallel, and drinking the four cups, all of the whole element of praise and celebration over the fact that God gave us our freedom. But the person is asking a question, and it seems like an irreverent kind of a question. And that is, if God arranged that we should be there in the slavery in the first place, so would you thank someone? It's like somebody put you in a situation of grave danger. Let's say somebody took you out into the woods or the jungles and just left you there all by yourself in a situation of grave danger, and you're completely desperate and you have no way to save yourself, and then suddenly the same person who put you in that situation comes in and rescues you from it. So what's your attitude going to be? You're going to feel a tremendous gratitude? Then the person's going to complain, well, how come you're not thanking me? I saved you from the jungle. And the person will say, what do you mean? You put me there in the first place. You should have left me alone. Why do I have to thank you for saving me from a situation of grave danger that I would not have been in had you not put me in there? You had no right to put me in the first place. In fact, I'm angry at you. The answer to the question is in accordance with what we're saying, that the bread of affliction is also, it's the same bread of geula, of redemption, which reflects that very significant idea, that in, the analogy is not a good one. Of course, if an individual, a person puts you in a situation of danger and suffering and then removes you from it, so you don't thank the person because they had no right to do it in the first place. That's just torturing another person, which you had no right to do. Then you decided to stop the evil. You don't deserve credit for that. But this is a different situation. This was designed for our benefit, for our perfection. Were it not for this avdus, we could never achieve the true geula, because we would be just like all the other nations that couldn't recognize the real value of human existence, the real purpose that God gave us life for, and what we should direct our energies towards accomplishing in this existence. So, in retrospect, when we look back on it, we see how beneficial the avdus was. Ah, so then we have to give gratitude to God. And when you're giving gratitude to God, that's the idea of the geula. You can't have geula without avdus. You can't have redemption without slavery. So the redemption is the culmination of a process which was instrumental, was essential for our being able to relate to the real purpose that God created us for. And that's a very, very significant idea, because many nations have been oppressed and so on and so forth. We're not the only ones. Generally speaking, the experience of a people or a nation that are afflicted, that suffer, when the situation changes and they overpower their oppressors, it doesn't make them into better people. To the contrary, you'll see that very often they'll turn around and do the exact same injustices to others. Because that's a psychological phenomenon, that when people suffer certain kind of psychological wounds, the instinctive reaction is to treat others in the way that they were treated. Somehow or other, psychologically, it makes them feel better, that they got even, so to speak, which, of course, is a very bad thing. But the experience of enslavement in and of itself does not lead to perfection unless it goes along with the giving of a system like the Torah and the mitzvos, education. Without that educational factor, so then, to the contrary, it doesn't make the person a better person. Very often it makes the person a worse person, because now they feel they're entitled to do whatever they want to do because they suffered enough. That didn't happen to the Jewish people. That's because the HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chishev HaZaketz, that's the idea that God calculated the end, that everything was done with calculation, and the intention was to bring the Jews to a state in which they could really relate to the true good of Torah and to really experience Geula. All right, so the Halach Ma'anya is followed by the Manashtana, which are the four questions. Or, as the Rambam learns, that this is not The Manishtan is not really the question. The Rambam learns that at this point the child asks whatever question he asks. Now, after that, we have a series of paragraphs which are a bit strange, and it's not clear how each and every one of them relates to the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. It starts off with Avadim Hayinu, we were slaves to Paro in Egypt. This is after, we're talking about after the four questions. We'll just learn according to those who maintain the classical view that those are the questions of the child. That's followed by the story. Everybody's familiar with the story of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, all those rabbis who were having the Seder in Bnei Brak. And they got involved in discussing the story all night long until their students came and told them that the time for the morning Shema had come. Right. Then you have the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Of course, the question that has to be raised, if you're going to pause at each one of these stories, is what does it have to do with anything? All right, so it's a story about people who had a Seder. So what is it teaching me? What do I learn from this? Why has it been incorporated into the Haggadah? We're going to take the next one. I'm Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, Harei ani kiven shivim shana. I am as one who was 70 years old. And I did not merit, well, literally, if you're going to translate, I did not merit that Yetzias Mitzrayim should be said in the evening. What he means is he didn't merit to understand. He didn't understand the reason why Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is the Exodus from Egypt, is mentioned at night. Ad Shedarsha Ben Zoma, until Ben Zoma gave the reason, the explanation, based upon exegesis of the pasuk. Shenemar, as it says, he quotes the pasuk. Laman tiskoros yom teischa me'eretz Yisrael, kol yemei chayecha. In order that you should remember the day you left Egypt, all the days of your life. Okay, so now, in the realm of exegesis, each word is significant. So basically, the question is, what is the teaching from the word kol, all? Because it could have simply said, Yemei Chayecha, the days of your lives. That you should remember the Exodus, the days of your lives. So that's what he says, Yemei Chayecha Hayamim. The days of your lives is a reference to the days. Kol Yemei Chayecha Halelos. So the kol comes to, well, there's two parts of the day. The calendar day has night and day. So Yemei Chayecha is a reference to the daytime. Kol means the entire day, which would mean the night as well. V'cham omrim, and the rabbis argue, and they say, Yemei Chayecha ho'olam hazeh. The days of your life are this world, so to speak. Kol Yemei Chayecha l'havi limos ha-mashiach. That all the days of your life has been stated to include the Messianic era. First of all, we have to establish what mitzvah they're talking about. It's clear that they're not talking about the mitzvah which pertains on this night of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, to tell the story of the Exodus, because, first of all, that's only said once a year. That's only done on the night of the 15th. Here they're talking about remembering Egypt every day for sure, everybody agrees. Then the question is whether you have to remember Egypt every night as well. Ben Zoma says yes, and the Chacham say no. Moreover, later on, the Haggadah discusses how we know that the mitzvah, that's Yochal Meresh Chodesh. That's talking about the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And there, the Haggadah explains how we know that that's done on the 15th, on the night of the 15th. So it's clear that this is not talking about the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So what is it doing in the Haggadah? It's a halachic discussion. It's taken out of the Gemara, pertaining to a different mitzvah. Now, what is the mitzvah it's pertaining to? Is, as the Rambam says, that in Hilchos Kriyashma, the Rambam discusses the mitzvah. The mitzvah of Kriyashma is to be said by day and by night. Actually, by night and by day, that's the correct order, because the night comes first. And then he explains the order of the paragraphs. First, the Shema, which talks about the unity of God and the love of God and study of God's Torah. Then, V'hoyim Shemoa, the second paragraph, which talks about performing the other mitzvos. Then the third one, Parshas Tzitzis, which is a reference, it's a remembrance of the other mitzvos. Then he raises the question, well, why do we say that at night? Why do we say the third parsha of the Shema, which is Tzitzis, at night? Since Tzitzis is a positive, is a time-bound command, positive command, of course, time-bound command. That's why women are putter. But that's not relevant over here. What's relevant is that the mitzvah of Tzitzis is knowing only by day. That the Laila is Lav Zman Tzitzis. That the nighttime is not the time of Tzitzis. So the Rambam's question is, so why should we say the Parsha of Tzitzis, which is a remembrance of all the mitzvahs, if night is not the time? The mitzvah is not knowing at night. So the Rambam says, the reason we say it is because it has Zichron Yetzias Mitzrayim. It has a remembrance of the Exodus. Because that's how it ends. Ani Yerushem Elokeichem, Asher Hotzeisi Eschem Me'aretz Mitzrayim, Liyosachem Elokim, Ani Hashem Elokeichem Emes. So that's a reference to the mitzvah of Zichron Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that's the mitzvah to recite, or to mention rather, the Exodus by day and by night. Parenthetically, it's interesting, all the commentaries write about this. The Rambam here is stating openly, explicitly, that it is a mitzvah to mention the Exodus by day and by night. Yet nowhere, neither in the Mishnah Torah, nor in the Sefer Mitzvos, does the Rambam list this as a separate mitzvah, as one of the 613 commandments. So that's generated a great deal of discussion. Now we learn that there are two mitzvos pertaining to our remembering of the Exodus. There is the mitzvah that we have every day, which has to be said by day, and as far as by night, that's an argument. That's what we're learning over here. The argument between Ben Zoma and the Chachamim as to whether it has to be said by night. Also, of course, it's very interesting. What's this whole... It seems to be depending upon whether you say it has to be said in the Yemos HaMashiach. The implications of this discussion are that the word Yemei Chayecha, the days of your life, is talking about the days. Now, we don't know, from there we wouldn't know night, because it's mentioning the days, nor would we know Mashiach, Yemos HaMashiach. That's the implication. So what does Kol come to teach us? The one who says that it comes to teach us Yemos HaMashiach, that even in Yemos HaMashiach, we're still going to say the Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. So he holds, he has to hold, that you don't say it at night. Because there's no source for the night. The one who says that you say it, that the Kol, rather, comes for the night, would have to hold that in Yemos HaMashiach you're not going to say it, because he's already used up the word of the Kol. Now he doesn't say, he doesn't reject the idea that Yemos HaMashiach requires a separate word or a separate source. He doesn't. He merely says there is no. That is to say, if you say that Kol refers to the evenings, then that's it. That the mitzvah of remembering the Exodus pertains by day and by night, but only in a certain historical period, up to the Mashiach. Once you have the Mashiach, it doesn't apply anymore. Our questions are, why is the story being brought down over here? What does it have to do with the Seder? Because it's talking about a different mitzvah. It's not talking about the mitzvah of telling the story of Mitzrayim. It's talking about the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is to mention the Exodus by day and by night. But that's not what we're doing tonight. Also, another question is, even if we were to understand what relationship this has to the Seder, this halacha, so why doesn't it just bring down the halacha? Why does it have to bring it down in the form of a story, of an anecdote in the life of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? What difference does that make to me, that this is something that he did not understand until he was someone as if he was as 70, and then he heard the drasha? What difference does that make? That's an anecdote. If the issue is to communicate to us this idea about that Yetzias Mitzrayim, Zeichah Yetzias Mitzrayim applies by day and by night. So what do I need to know about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? Also, of course, we need to understand what is the difference between the two. What's the difference between the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim and the mitzvah which we do once a year on the night of the 15th, and the mitzvah of Zecher, Zechiras, remembering the Yetzias Mitzrayim? What's the difference between those two mitzvahs? Yeah, there's a difference between just mentioning something or taking note of something, as opposed to telling the story of the narrative of some very, very significant event. I think we can all relate to that. Because if you've been through something of significance, let's say you've been through a very meaningful experience which contains tremendous lessons for your life, whatever it is. Let's say you were in a dangerous situation and things happened, and you, as a result of that, you changed your whole attitude towards life and your relationship to God. And it could be an illness a person goes through, it could be an accident a person goes through, whatever the case is. And as a result of that, you, because of these events, you have a whole new attitude, a whole new determination, a whole new philosophy of life. So, for argument's sake, it's possible that a person would say that it's important for you to review. This is something that you should review. Or initially, when you first come out of the situation, you want to tell it to someone. You want to tell the story. So that's the narrative, where you go through all of the experiences and how it affected you, and you bring out the entire emotional experience, everything that took place in the story. Now, you're not going to do that every day of the year, because we're not constructed that way. You can't repeat a story after it loses its significance. It's just going to become repetitive. It's not going to have an impact. You just can't do it. But the lesson that you've learned, you want to carry it around with you. So then it becomes something that you refer to it. And when you refer to it, it reminds you. Because we need a reminder. Even though a person went through a tremendous experience and now they say, my whole life has changed, all my values have changed, but you need a reminder. It's sort of like the mezuzah. That's what the Rambam says about the mezuzah. It's a sign. And that is that when you come into the household, you pause and you consider. Because the mezuzah really represents the key ideas of life, that the only thing that endures eternally is the knowledge of God. And that's really what you should direct your activities toward. So when you're leaving your house, you're going into the world at large, you should keep this idea in mind. But you're not consciously going through all these ideas. And once you reflect on it, it has its effect upon you. It's in the back of your mind now. But it's causing you to act in a certain way. And the same thing when you enter your house. You need a reminder. But once I give you, and once I show you the mezuzah, you see, this makes sense only if a person understands what the mezuzah is. Unfortunately, many people don't even know what it is. So if they just think it's some beautiful box with some piece of paper in there with some words on it, which they don't even know what it is, there's no way that it's going to serve as a reminder to people. But it's a reminder. And that's very important. It could be sort of just, you know, to give a very simplistic example, sometimes a person will wear something to serve as a reminder. Sometimes a person ties a string around, or a person wears a wedding band. It's a reminder. It's a reminder that you're in a different state and that you have to act a certain way. That's part of the idea of a woman covering her head. That's a reminder of modesty. So there is the concept of a reminder. However, the reminder only has significance after a person has explored the event and all of its lessons and all of its ideas, and now it has a meaning for that person. So then you could set it up as a reminder. Now, the foundational event of the Jewish people is the whole experience of the enslavement. As the Ramban explains, all the fundamental ideas of Yahadus and our concept of God, that God is the source of everything and God created the world from nothing, and the fact that God retains absolute control, the power of God to direct the course of history and miracles and so on and so forth, all of the foundational ideas which govern our understanding of God and our relationship to God is based upon the Exodus. So the mitzvah on the night of the 15th is Sipur, to tell the story, to go through the story and all of the ideas and all the implications, and to gain a complete appreciation of what this narrative is. Where do you find an example of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim in the Torah itself? Who would you say was the first person to engage in the actual mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? It seems to me that this is what Moshe did when Yisro came to reunite with him after the Exodus. The story of Yisro that Yisro heard. He heard, but he wanted to explore and find out what had taken place. So he came to visit Moshe, and he brought Moshe's wife and two sons. And then it says that the two men greeted each other, and each one inquired of the other how they're doing, and then they went inside the tent. Now listen to the words in Pasuk. This is Yud Ches Pasuk Ches in Shemos. Vayisaper Moshe lechosno Sipur, and Moshe told his father-in-law, Eish kol asher asa ad Hashem leparo ulemitzrayim, everything that God did to Paro and to Egypt, al odos Yisrael, for the sake of Israel, Eish kol atzlah Hashem atzah sam aderech, and all of the weariness that they encountered on the road, vayatzilem ad Hashem, and God saved them. So basically, that Sipur, he told them, he's someone who experienced it. So Yisro heard about the thing in general, the generality, but you can't really draw conclusions from a general report. He wanted to hear all the particulars, all the specifics. And that's what he went to Moshe. That was the best source. And he engaged in Sipur. Now, what was the reaction? Vayichad Yisro, he rejoiced for all the good that God had done for Israel and that he had saved Israel from Egypt. And then he blessed Hashem. And eventually, according to the rabbis, he converted to Judaism. So that's really the true Sipur. That's the objective of Sipur, to tell it over, and if it's done properly to an intelligent individual, this person will have a tremendous appreciation of what God did. That is the mitzvah of Sipur. And I would maintain, without Sipur, you really can't have Zechira. Because what are you remembering? You're remembering an event, you're just mentioning something which has no significance to you, so what's the point? So, the actual Sipur is one night a year. This is the night of Sipur. And this establishes the significance of the Exodus. Then, of course, it's something of great significance. It's the foundation of foundation. And therefore, every day and every night, you have to make reference to the event. But now you can make reference to it because now you've established its significance and it serves as a reminder. Yeah, there's no question that there's a relationship between the two mitzvos. In fact, it's even a question that when a person says Kriya Shema on that night, is that considered also a certain fulfillment of Sipur, Yetzias Mitzrayim? Thus, it's important to know every aspect of the story and the fact that there is a mitzvah which is related to Sipur, that is, the mitzvah of Zechira is very significant. That enhances the whole importance of the recitation. Also, of course, a person has to be able to differentiate, to know how to differentiate between Sipur and between Zechira. But, as we said, of greater significance is that it enhances the whole performance of the mitzvah. That the mitzvah over here is related to the other mitzvah, as we said, because you can't have the zechira without the sipur. So a person should be cognizant of that. And of course, the other issue is whether it should be said by day and by night, whether it should be said in Yemos HaMashiach, which we're not going into right now. But all of that is very, very relevant to the whole inyan of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So there's two kinds of mitzvah. There's a mitzvah of Sipur, there's a mitzvah of Zechira. But appreciating the significance of the inyan, of the area of Yetzias Mitzrayim, you can gain an appreciation from the learning about the mitzvah of Zechira and taking up the whole question as to whether it should be said in Yemos HaMashiach and so on and so forth. That's why the material is relevant to the night. Of course, the question is, what is the importance of the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? That is, why is this being introduced with his comment that he was like 70 years old and he didn't understand this and then he heard the drasha? Why is that significant? This all goes back to Avadim Hayinu, which is the first paragraph after the Manashtana, which starts off by saying that we were slaves to Paro in Egypt and God took us out of there with a strong hand. Now, ostensibly, this seems to be an answer to the question of the child. Why is this night different? And it's true, but it's not only that. It's more than just an answer to the question. Because then it mentions that had God not taken us out, then we and our children and children's children would be enslaved to Pharaoh in Egypt. Okay, fine. And a lot of commentaries ask the question, why would we still be enslaved after so many thousands of years? But then it says something else, and that is that even if we're all wise and discerning and sages, and we all know the Torah, it is a mitzvah upon us to discuss the Exodus from Egypt, and the more one engages in this discussion, the more praiseworthy. What does that have to do with the idea that we were slaves? What is the basic idea of this paragraph? The answer is that after the Manashtana, we don't immediately engage in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. But rather, the first thing we do is to discuss the mitzvah, to teach you that before you perform a mitzvah, you have to get a basic understanding of the mitzvah. So all the paragraphs, which culminate with Yochol Me'Rosh Chodesh, I would think it's from Rosh Chodesh, all of those paragraphs are basically discussing the nature of the mitzvah itself. And then we launch into the mitzvah. That's why this paragraph is establishing the foundation. What is the tam of the mitzvah? What is the reason? Why do we have to engage in this mitzvah? And the answer is because we were slaves. We went through this experience. And it's interesting, that explains the connection, that it's not just something that's historical. It is not just something that happened to our forefathers and doesn't relate to us. Because if that's the case, then maybe it wouldn't be incumbent upon us. But it contains the second idea that had this not happened, had God not redeemed our forefathers, then we too and our children's children would have been slaves. So we would have been eternally in that state of enslavement. So that means that it's something that pertains to us. So really the purpose of this paragraph is to establish what is the basis for the chiyah, for the obligation to discuss the sipur, the story. That is, the mitzvah. What is the basis of the obligation of the mitzvah? That's the first thing I have to know about a mitzvah. That's what this paragraph is establishing. Then it's telling you a very significant thing. That, okay, is the objective of the mitzvah to get a knowledge of the story? If that's the case, then it's not going to be forever. The person would be obligated like a child or when you get a little older. But once you know the story, that's it. Since I already know the story. That's when it brings in no. That no matter, even if you're a great sage and no matter how wise you are, no matter how much you know, you still have an obligation. So therefore, the nature of the mitzvah is not that you engage in it in order to obtain a certain finite result, but to be immersed in all of the ideas that pertain to this event. And that's infinite. The amount of wisdom that's contained here is infinite. So no matter how great you are, when you're immersed in the data, you'll find new insights. And the more, there's a certain perfection. So it's not a perfunctory thing with a limit, like shaking a lulav. That's it. No one says the more you shake the lulav, the more praiseworthy. Now, in the subsequent paragraphs, there is an important concept. To drive home this point, see, the Haggadah is really an educational tool. First you teach the abstract idea, then illustrations. The next thing the Haggadah goes to is to illustrate these points. It doesn't just make the point in the abstract. It gives you concrete examples, illustrations, which will inspire you, not just on an intellectual level, but also on an emotional level. So the very first thing is the story. Now you can understand the story of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon. These are the greatest sages of the time. And they are gathered for the purpose of the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And we've just made the point that the greater you are, the more enhanced is your experience. The more profound is the experience. So that's a perfect example. These people who knew, had more knowledge than anybody else, they were up all night to the extent that they lost track of mitzvahs. They forgot about the Kriya Shema. That's how completely immersed and involved they were in the subject matter. The extent of the focus that a person can attain. The second one, that's followed by Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And there are two things over here. Of course, the subject matter, that is the ideas pertaining to Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, is important. Because the mitzvah of Zechira is related to the mitzvah of Sipur. So you have to know that. You have to know all aspects of the mitzvah. But I believe that it is introduced anecdotally to make this point, a specific example of the idea that Torah knowledge is infinite. And that there's a difference between the area of Torah and other areas of knowledge or science. In other areas, a person is generally curious and inquisitive when he's young. When he's young, he's looking for knowledge, and he's also a little rebellious, and he's attacking. Every generation is always attacking the premises of the establishment of the previous generation. But you'll see that after a certain point in time, when they become the establishment, then they become very defensive, and their minds become closed, and then they don't have that same curiosity, that same desire to learn something new. There's also an ego factor. They don't have this idea of learning from somebody else. They're very reluctant to learn because I'm an authority. It's a very important theme of the Haggadah that the person who seeks knowledge does not become egotistical. Who is a chacham? One who learns mikol adam. You see that the greatest sages gathered together to have the Seder. Each one could have had his own Seder, and he could have conducted it in front of listeners and followers, and he would have been the one in command, in charge, so to speak. But they recognized that no matter how great they are, there's something they can learn from other experts, from other Chachamim. So all the Chachamim get gathered together. That's an extremely important point. But that's only possible if you're not dealing with people who are essentially ego-driven, ego-oriented. Today there are many intellectuals, perhaps even thinkers, but they're pretty much ego-oriented, which limits you. If a person's ego-oriented, then they're kind of limited. Who can they learn from? Some people they can learn from. Generally speaking, if that person is regarded universally as the greatest person, they can learn from. But they're very reluctant to learn from someone who's just a colleague. Because that's a blow to their own ego. Who is he that I can, so to speak, if you're saying that I can learn something from him, you're sort of diminishing me. That's the kind of point, he's on my level, I don't need him for that. And certainly the idea of learning something from a student or learning something from someone who's not on your level, that is very difficult for someone who's ego-oriented. Because it's sort of implying that he knows more than me, or I can learn something from him. It's taking away from a person's honor or ego. But the real Ben Torah is not ego-oriented. His whole drive is for knowledge, and he recognizes that these differentiations, these distinctions are pretty absurd. Practically speaking, of course, you have to know who the rabbi is, who's the rav, who's the expert. That's something else. But in the world of love of knowledge, a wise person will hear an idea from anyone, even from a child. If the thing makes sense, that's all he cares about. And he's happy. He's going to be very happy to get a new insight, no matter who it comes from. Shema MSBP Omro. Hear the truth from the one who says it. That's a fundamental of the educational philosophy of Judaism. That's why this is brought in over here. If you want to partake of a Seder properly, You've got to divest yourself of this ego-oriented approach. And even someone like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, it's telling us about Torah that a seemingly simple fundamental point doesn't seem like such a very difficult point. How do I know that the Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim is at night? Even that, he was like 70 years old and he didn't know. And he wasn't ashamed. That shows you that he wasn't ashamed to admit it. Most people are ashamed to admit it. There are a tremendous amount of lessons that can be derived from every paragraph, every story in the Haggadah. That a person should never feel that he knows enough. Or that he's too ashamed to ask, to admit that he didn't know a certain thing, even if it's basic. And that he had that youthful attitude. See, in Torah, a person never, the true Talmud Chacham never loses that youthful attitude of wonder, of a love of learning new things. These are the reasons why the Haggadah brings in this story. Now, it wanted to make these points, but I believe that in order to make these points, the context in which this is expressed should have something to do with the theme of Haggadah. So this is a perfect example. That is, you have two elements over here. The fact that the discussion pertains to the Exodus, because as we said, in order to appreciate the Exodus, you have to appreciate the significance of the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. So that you have a passage which pertains to that, and it's introduced with the anecdote of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, which is a perfect illustration of the idea that even a great chacham in Judaism, the Jewish approach to learning, to obtaining knowledge, is different. That a person always approaches it from a non-ego-oriented perspective, in which the ultimate joy is the discovery of new ideas. And a person never reaches the point where that's it, I'm an authority, I'm an expert, and now his point is just to defend his positions against others. He's always prepared to forget about his positions and to relate to ideas on the merits, in terms of which is the one that makes the most sense.